Chris Miles was able to retire twice by the time he was 39 years old. But he's not content to just enjoy his own financial freedom and peace of mind. Chris wants you to have your own ripple effect so you can live free today. He's not the financial advisor you expected. He's the anti-financial advisor you deserve. He's jumping behind the mic right now, ready to make waves. Here's Chris Miles.
Hello, my fellow Ripplers. This is Chris Miles, your cash flow expert and anti-financial advisor. Welcome out for a wonderful show, a show that's for you and about you. Those of you that work so hard for your money and you're ready for your money to start working harder for you now. You want that freedom, that cash flow, the prosperity today, not 20 or 30 or 1,000, 30, 40 million years from now, whatever it is, right? But you want that money working for you today so you have that cash flow, that freedom, that life, to be able to do what you want, when you want, and with whom you want. But it's not just about your own comfort and convenience, because as Ripplers, you want to create a ripple effect in the lives of others. You want to be a blessing in the lives of those around you. And I appreciate you allowing me to create a ripple effect through you. So thank you so much for guys for tuning in, for binging, for doing all the things you've done, sharing with your friends and colleagues and coworkers and everything else. It's been awesome. I love seeing that this show keeps growing and growing and growing all the time. Like every week, the numbers keep growing, and that's because of you guys. And I hope that's because I'm providing great value for you. As a reminder, if you got questions, you want better, you know, want something from me, right? You can always check out the website, moneyripples.com, or you can even shoot me an email, chris@moneyripples.com as well. Hey guys, quick shout out to our sponsor, American Homeowner Preservation. Hey guys, if you want to make a great rate of return with little money out of pocket, even as little as $100, and do it while helping other people as well, check these guys out. You know, the website's fundingahp.com. The way they do it, they crowdfund money, people's money together to go and help essentially become the bank. They buy up people's mortgages that are defaulting, people that are late on their mortgages. They help them refinance, stay in their home, and or sell their home so that they can be in a better financial position. And the cool thing is that they pay awesome returns and they pay it monthly. And like I said, you can invest with as little as $100. So check them out. Websites, fundingahp.com. That's fundingahp.com. Check them out. So today I want to talk about kind of going back to some of the basic core beliefs about abundance and scarcity and really about economics, right? Really about how money works and really about the core of stewardship here. And I've been really thinking about this for a long time now. And I realize that more and more, the things that you guys, and even my own clients, even my clients that get all these strategies to figure out how to, you know, increase their cash flow, their passive income, so they can get out of the rat race and retire young, the one thing that seems to elude them is more of the principle side. The strategy side, understand that once you understand the strategy and what's possible, it becomes easier. But it's the principles, the real core economic principles, that actually prevents more fear and scarcity in your life. Because when you understand how money truly works, the rest of it actually becomes easier. And so I'm really kind of going back to the roots here a little bit more. I want to go back to something that applies to you, whether you're making millions of dollars or you've got millions of dollars in debt or whatever you might be or anywhere in between. But I want to go into that. And I'm going to specifically use something that I've learned myself, some of these core principles around economics. And I'm going to go to an actual speech that was given back in 1853. So yeah, we're looking back, what is that, 170 years approximately, right? And this speech is actually by a guy by the name of Brigham Young. Some of you guys might have heard of it. You might have heard of the university that's in Salt Lake or in Provo, Utah. And basically Brigham Young was one of the leaders that brought the pioneers into the state of Utah. Now, Utah was kind of an obscure state, especially at that time, because it was a desert. I mean, nobody wanted it. Mexico didn't hardly want it. And they eventually, the U.S. won it in the war, and then it became part of the United States, but it was part of Mexico for a while. It was considered kind of wasteland, right? Kind of like a lot of Nevada and some of the regions around here. And they came and settled this valley and made it flourish. And a big reason for that is because of the principles, the economic principles that were being taught, specifically by Brigham Young at that time and several others. But I found a talk of his that he gave, a speech back in 1853. This is actually just 6 years after the these people came, the pioneers came and settled in the valley. So he had just moved here 6 years prior, was now reflecting on what to do with stewardship, with blessings. And this is such a great talk. In fact, by the way, if you want to find it, I'll actually name this this particular episode the same name as what you'll find online, called The Use and Abuse of Blessings. This is the part one of stewardship. We're going to talk about this. I'm going to break this up into two segments because there are so many truths and so many good principles. We could literally talk for hours on this. But since we're not really having a big conversation, since I'm just talking to myself right now, and you're a part of this as well, I'm going to try to keep it into two. But this is the speech that you'll find here. So again, it's called The Use and Abuse of Blessings by Brigham Young. Speeches from 1853. You Google it, you can find this yourself. And so I'm going to use excerpts from this speech because I'm going to apply this to today. Although he's talking a lot to farmers and ranchers and people like that, this is very much the same exact principles that work just as true today as they were back then and as they were thousands of years before them. These are just the basic truths of money and stewardship. And so I want to get into this because if you truly want to increase and grow your stewardship and increase that level of freedom and prosperity, you've got to understand this. This is a must, all right? This also, by the way, this kind of is why the saver mentality around financial advice right now is horrible, because you'll hear it come out a little bit. So anyways, I'm going to start with just talking about some of the excerpts from this, right? So talking about stewardship here. This is the part I love as he opens this up. He says, "Do you think persons can be blessed too much?" I will answer it myself. Yes, they can, and they can be blessed to their injury. For instance, and he talks about like if those people are blessed with the knowledge of the holy gospel, with the, you know, the Christian religion, right? He's like, but they have, their hearts are set to do evil. He says they can actually use that wickedness to turn blessing into curses, right? Because really, if you think about it, money is a magnifier of our souls. It magnifies us to do more and express more of who we are. So naturally, you can bless somebody too much, right? You don't want to bless people that have bad intentions, right? We don't want to do that. We don't want to give them more power. We want them to have less, naturally. We want people that are good people like you guys to have this kind of power. So he also says this too. He says, but can you bless a wise man too much? A man who knows what to do with his blessings when they are bestowed upon him? No, you cannot. Can you bless a wise people too much? No, it is impossible. When they know how to improve upon all the blessings that are bestowed upon them. And so he talks about like when you actually know what to do with these blessings, you cannot bless somebody too much, especially if they're wise. They'll actually use these blessings for good. This is what I'm ultimately trying to teach you guys as creating this ripple effect, right? Is to become better stewards to create a better difference and bless more people's lives. Not just to have fun and freedom and, you know, fun in the sun and all that kind of stuff, right? This is not just about living on a beach or doing whatever life you want, driving fast cars. This is none of that crap. This is all about ultimately how you can prosper yourself and then bless others too. And that is really the crux of what I'm trying to help you guys do, right? He further says, many people were blessed so much that they esteem their blessings as good for nothing. He says, I have seen hundreds and thousands and scores of thousands of bushels of grain lying to waste and rot when it has not brought a great price. He says, now many of these people have thought and expressed themselves in language like this. He says, these people will say, I can go to California and get so much gold, or I can trade and make so much gold. I cannot therefore spend time to take care of wheat nor to raise it. Let it lie there and rot while I go and accumulate riches. Now, guys, understand, 1853, this is not long after your 49ers, right? 1849, the gold rush in California. A lot of the people in Utah actually helped and went to go seeking after gold from the gold rush, because, of course, that spread a little bit east right to Utah, and they said, hey, head over to California. This is where it's at, not this desert crap place. He's saying, hey, you basically just let your fields rot. You know, you let your crops rot and to seek and essentially gamble for more riches, for something that might have been, for most people that went to California, it was something that was too good to be true, wasn't it? It's something that actually didn't work out. And this is what he says, and I love this. He says, they were then wealthy, for their granaries and barns were full of the blessings of the Lord, but now they are empty because they did not know what to do with their blessings. So understand that because they dropped their stewardship, they left it. Now I want to take this and apply this to us today, right? I see this a lot of times with, you know, people will say, Chris, what kind of investments should I do, right? And especially if they're business owners, they'll say, Chris, what, you know, I'm in business, but I feel like I've owned a job. I want to get out of this. So what kind of investments should I do? And sometimes they'll start looking at almost creating a brand new business doing the investing. And they might say, hey, maybe I want to do this kind of business, you know, this kind of real estate investing, for example, which does require a lot of time and energy. And I'll say, listen, you know, your economic engine is your business. Or for those who don't have business, it's your job. That is your economic engine. That is the thing that provides. That's the thing that actually gives you all the money you need to do some of these other things. And I said, listen, if you don't have the capacity, if your time is maxed out with the work you're doing right now, and this is my recommendation to you guys, is don't pivot and turn and try to do something completely different that you're no good at. Or maybe you haven't even learned yet or barely learned. That is not cool. Stick with what you know, master it, perfect it, get better at it, command a higher premium and price for it, and then invest in things outside of that. But these things that you invest in should be more passive. They should be less time and energy and attention. Now, of course, you can make way more money being an active investor where you're managing and controlling and creating a business. But I've seen way too many people who say, hey, I'm going to go and jump out of this business and jump into this new business, only to realize they created the same exact problem they were complaining about with their previous business, which is they own a job. They're trapped. They still have no work to create money. There's not that automation, so to speak, those systems in place to keep paying them, whether they're working or not. It's not passive. It's very active. And active is good, but don't go jumping from one place to the next. You already have the, you know, your fields full and your flocks ready to go. Don't abandon them to go chasing after some sort of gold or riches because of somebody marketing it to be amazing, okay? So yes, I'm calling bull on people that are trying to make something sound way too good, you know, and then it just takes your focus away and you end up losing more money. This happened to me when I tried to create multiple streams of income back in like during the recession, right? I was freaking out trying to figure out what to do. And so I was trying to create multiple streams of income. I said, hey, I'm going to create 5 businesses. And so I had 5, some of them were already running and I created a few more to add in there to make a total of 5. Guys, my income overall dropped as a whole. I made income in all 5 of those businesses, but the overall income that I made was less than what I made when I only had 2 to focus on. Focus is key, right? That's why you got to do that. That's why when you guys come and ask me about investments, often I'm trying to help alleviate, even though shiny object syndrome can be very easy when you open up this whole new world of investments, you got to be careful. So anyways, just want to pause on that because that is a big, big deal. You have wealth already where you are. Could you create even residual streams of income through your businesses? Those of you that are in business, yes, you might be able to do that. There might be opportunities to make money right where you're standing now. You don't have to go and create something new. It may already be asking for you to create wealth from it. So focus on what you have around you, right? Look at that. All right, so moving on. Here's where it really comes down to the crux of this, right? This is the overall advice he gives. You'll hear this over and over again. He says, you know, he talks about perhaps you will not know what to do with it. He says, I know what you ought to do with it, referring to blessings, right? Or referring to your resources and that kind of thing. He says, you ought to say to your poor brethren, come and help me take care of my grain and share with me and feed yourselves and your families. And he says this, he says, when you have more than you can take care of yourselves, I say, hand it over and let your neighbors take care of it for you. And you'll see this time and time again. You know, here's a great story that he used. He talked about there was a season right after they came into the valley. It's interesting because there's going to be a twist on this you're going to hear. In the season, they came and there was actually 2 seasons of crops that happened in 1 year. There was an early spring, they harvested their crops, and then in the late spring, they're able to harvest again. Now, he talked about it. He says when he saw these farmers that were here in the valley, he says, let these brethren who have come with me gather up this wheat. He says, but they would not suffer them to do it. He says, some of the brethren had gathered crops of grain and left a great deal wasting on the fields. I said, let the poor brethren who have come in from abroad glean in your fields. You can bear me witness that a great many widows and poor men came here and brought very little with them. And there never was a man, to my knowledge, ever expressed a desire to let them glean in his field. So understand this, that time when they were just starting to come in, you know, those farmers were saying, hey, I got to hold on what I have, you know, right? Like they didn't want them to even take the stuff that was either extra that they couldn't harvest or two was lying on the ground. He said, and so he said, all right, I said, we can live on greens, while at the same time there was more wasted that season than to make up the deficiency that all might have been comfortable. Or in other words, he said that there's essentially enough of the crops to feed everybody that was coming in the valley. And you can even share in that labor of those people coming in, say, here, earn your keep, go pick. You pick it, help me pick it, help me harvest it, and I'll give you some of it, right? He says, brother, let the brethren and sisters help you to husk your corn, to gather it and put it safely away, for so much it will benefit them and help you. And this is what he says the other farmer said. He says, oh, he replied, I have nothing to spare. I can take care of it myself. I saw it wasting and said to him, brother, get your corn husked immediately and let the brethren do it and pay them with a portion of it. He replied, I cannot spare a bit of it. And here's the trick. Here's the key. Brigham said this. He says, I have no question of it at all in my mind, but 3/4 of his corn went into the mud and was trampled down by the cattle, and women and children went without bread in consequence of it. That man had no judgment. He knew not what to do with the blessings the Lord had bestowed upon him. Now, guys, like this is key right here. How many of us have heard people say, I can't afford it, right? How many times did I, as a financial advisor early on in my career, I remember thinking that when the opportunity came up to share in what I was doing, right, share and even delegate tasks to other people, I couldn't do it because I thought, well, I got to keep 100% for myself. There's hardly enough. Now, the thing is, I didn't quite have an overabundance of business either, right? I mean, I had more than enough time to take care of everything. But what I learned later, which actually helped me to retire the first time when I was 28, wasn't because I had invested in and bought tons of real estate or other investments like that. Those actually came later. The thing that had happened was the idea that I got from one of these guys that understood these principles. He said, Chris, like, hey, do you like doing mortgages? Well, I love teaching mortgages, but I don't like doing all the paperwork and the underwriting and the applications and stuff. I don't like doing that. Well, Chris, why don't you just delegate it to somebody else? Have them do it for you and you guys split the commissions. Maybe you split it 50-50. I thought, do you think somebody would do that? And he said, oh yeah, there's people that would do that. And what happened, I ended up hanging my license with a mortgage broker, found a guy in that company that was really good on the back end. He was good at servicing my clients, you know, the people that I had, but he was better at really being, he wasn't so much the teacher like I was. He was more the guy who was just good at doing the crossing his T's and dotting his I's. And we had a great partnership together. In fact, it was cool because I'd spend maybe a half an hour to an hour with a client or a potential client. And most of the time I was just teaching them because I thought it would be fun to say, hey, here's how you take your mortgage, maybe lower the payment, get cash out, invest it. It can make your mortgage payment for you. And they're like, that's awesome. Well, how do we do this mortgage? I was like, go talk to that guy. You know, and that's what I do. I worked with that guy. I said, hey, would you be willing if I sent people to you? We already knew the type of mortgage we wanted. You just helped me do the paperwork. He said, of course I'll do that. I'm like, will you split me 50-50? Yes. I was mortgage licensed at the time. So I did. And that's what happened, guys. Half an hour with the client, month and a half later, they're super happy. They're even sending referrals to me for other people to work with me. And I was making like $1,000 to $1,500 for each one of those clients. And guys, I wasn't even advertising. I was doing no advertising at all. In fact, remember, I was trying to not be a financial advisor in that time. I quit being a financial advisor. I hadn't quite become the anti-financial advisor at this point, but I was referring that out. And I started to get the impression of, wait a minute, what if I could keep creating value and serving people that, hey, I'm creating a win-win-win transaction. It's a win for the business owner I'm connecting them to, but it's a win for the client as well. And I'm getting the win because I'm the guy in the middle making the connection, right? I thought, this is awesome. This is essentially what I do a lot with my own clients. You know, when I'm connecting them with deals and stuff, I'll charge a consulting fee, but I'll connect them with that and help them strategize and create that game plan and then connect them. And it's not like I have to do everything. In fact, my life is so much better because I focus on what I do best and I let those people do what they do best. We actually rely on each other and understand that everybody prospers in this kind of world. Can you see how awesome that would be if people would get out of that scarcity mode and say, hey, what if I actually leverage other people for their talents or their time or energy or whatever they need? Hey, if I've got a surplus, they can come get it. Do you know what's crazy? I'm in a neighborhood right now. I mean, we're talking about crops, right? Just earlier, but there's actually literally today, I watch crops being wasted all the time in people's yards, especially in the neighborhood I'm in now. Now, I was in a neighborhood before where it wasn't as economically affluent, right? And there would be people like, I remember we even had peach trees and we would tell people, hey, we got more peaches than we can pick. And that was the truth. Like, I didn't want to spend hours and hours, hours picking peaches. Plus, I'm scared to death of wasps. I cannot stand wasps. Scares me. Spiders don't scare me nearly as much as wasps. Snakes, not as bad as wasps. Wasps freak me out. Okay. So I would pick some peaches, but after a while, when they start buzzing around, I'm like, I can't take it anymore. I'm done. Like, that's my fear factor, you know? And that's it. But I'd have other people like, why don't you guys come over and get them? Hey, there's some other stuff. We can't eat all this stuff. Or, hey, help us pick them. We'll even, you know, create peaches or jar, you know, can them. That's the word. I was going to jar them, you know, can the peaches, and then we can all split the labor or split the goods, right? And that was the cool thing is that you can actually get labor and stuff from that. Funny thing is in this neighborhood now, like a lot of times people will put on there and say, I can't get anybody to take free food. Oh, I have to pick it. And I can just go to the store and buy it. Guys, I'm telling you that when you get to that kind of place where you're like, I don't need that. I don't need those kind of blessings. This is what happens. Here, I'm going to find that for you. He actually already said this and it was true because it actually happened to them in real life. All right, where is it? Okay. Ah, here it is. He says, when this people are blessed so much that they consider their blessings a burden and a drudge to them, you may always calculate on a cricket war, a grasshopper war, a drought, too much rain, or something else to make the scales preponderate the other way. This people have been blessed too much so that they have not known what to do with their blessings. Think about this. He says there's going to be a cricket war, grasshopper war, a drought, too much rain even, or something to throw the scales the other way. When you feel like your blessings are a burden, when you feel like you have too much, that is when it's taken away from you. Here's the funny thing. I shouldn't say it's funny because it was not great, but if you ever come to Salt Lake City or if you have, they talk about the seagulls. You'll see that the seagull is a state bird, which you would not imagine that would be a great thing to have considering they eat crap in McDonald's drive-thrus, but they weren't always that way. The crazy thing is there's seagulls in Utah. Why? Because here's what happened in 1848, just a year after Brigham Young came to the valley, there was a massive amount of crickets that came and started eating all their crops. This is right after he said they had a two crop season, right? Remember that? He said that happened the year before. And he said, that's when there's a lot of food wasted and trampled. And he could have fed the people that were coming over essentially widowed and broke, but they didn't. They said, I can't afford it. I don't have enough resource. I don't have enough money, whatever, right? I don't have enough crops to share with everybody else, even though they let it rot into the ground. The next year, crickets came, started eating all their crops, and they were panicked. They didn't know what to do. They started praying desperately, and that's when they started to see this massive black cloud come from the west. That black cloud, as they got closer and closer, they realized it wasn't a cloud. They were actually birds, and they weren't just any birds. They were seagulls who came in and started gobbling up millions of crickets, millions upon millions. I mean, this was like looked like the end of times type of thing. And they were just gobbling up like crazy. And that is why Siegel is like a hero in the state of Utah, the ones that eat crap from McDonald's. That's right. So there you go. Cricket war. So he's talking about this 5 years after the fact that this happened. He's saying, if you don't know what to do with these blessings, you'll lose them. This is also where, if you've ever heard me say this at different times, if you listen to the podcast, you'll hear that my mantra is when it comes to your stewardship, if you're not going to use it, lose it. Sell it, give it away, or let somebody else use it, right? Like, do something, donate it, whatever, so that it goes to someone who will use those blessings or use those things versus just wasting it away. He talks about like there really is nothing, and there's not really enough to waste. No matter how prosperous you are, you should not be wasteful, because that's where you'll lose things. Now, don't take this to the far scarcity side, which people do, which is they hoard, right? Hoarding is not the case. And I'll talk about that in a little later, but that is essentially what we want to avoid, is hoarding, right? But he talks about that anytime something happens where you consider it a burden or it's drudgery to you, you will lose it. I will tell you, I've seen this true in business. If you've ever thought you have too much business, you're too busy, guess what? There will be a point where you'll say, dang, I wish I had that busyness back. It happens every time, guys. You ever think your money is a burden? You will always go to the point where you're comfortable with your stewardship. You will always shrink back to that comfort level. Whatever it is, it'll always shrink back to where you're comfortable. The key is, and then for this first part, if you get anything, the key is figure out how you can increase that stewardship and manage that stewardship. But if you don't, here's the, of course, the big thing he says over and over and over. The ultimate message is this: never let anything go to waste. Be prudent, save everything, and what you get more than you can take care of yourselves, ask your neighbors to help you. This is where you can share in it. Hey, if you figure out you can't manage your money, find a place to put it. You know, maybe you put it with other people that are looking for money. Maybe this is why syndications are a good fit, because you say, hey, listen, these people need money for investments. I know that money, it's in and of itself, is not a huge value add, but it does have some value, and that's why I can get paid a return on that money. Put it to use. In fact, he says it over and over again, is that your money is meant to be put to usury, not meant to sit on a shelf. He actually talks about, and I'll end with this before I move on to the next one. Actually, no, I won't. I'll save it for the next one, in fact. So the next episode. But anyways, just remember this, is that your stewardship to it, for it to grow and increase, you have to manage it. You have to care for it. And whatever you don't care for, you will lose it. All right. So that's my first key thing is there, is like, if you're not going to be able to manage and use it, find someone else who does. Allow others to share in the blessings of abundance with you, and watch how you all can prosper together. Guys, I hope you make it a wonderful and prosperous life as a result of this. And we'll talk to you soon. Hey!
Visit us online at moneyripples.com for more resources to help you fix money leaks and get your money working harder for you now.